Harihi Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavaditamastamavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Okay, page 10. When there is a contradiction between smritis, there is no recourse except referring to shruti. Only those smritis which concur with the shrutis should be respected. Because it has to go back to shruti. And so shruti will be giving the main point, smritis are giving various ways you can apply that point. Right? You know, it's just like someone has, you know, it's just like chanting japa. So then someone likes to chant before Mangalarti, someone after Mangalarti, someone will do there, someone will do all day, someone will chant in the evening. It means they all find what works for them in their situation. Right? So it may seem that there's a contradiction there. But if you go back to the origin, then the point is that one should be chanting Hare Krishna. You know, 24 hours is better. But, you know, at least some of the day. So then you find what works for you, right? So the person who has, you know, does puja and does all that kind of thing, they'll want to chant before Mangalarti. Mm-hmm. Like that. Does that make sense? The others, then they'll get up and chant there and do it during the day. Or someone else, because they get up, they have their work and all those things like that, then they'll chant in the evening. Do you understand? So it works for their situation. So smritis, then their great personalities, how they've applied it in their situations, but in a way that it's accessible for others, right? And so if there's seemingly a contradiction, there isn't one, because when you go back to the shruti, you'll see that there's a principal point that they're all supporting. Yes.
Well, we see that those who argue over smriti, they also don't accept the shruti, or they interpret it differently.
Yes,
like we
yes.
see pradhan.
Yes, yes, yes.
All that stuff.
So that's the whole point, is that they may not be able to appreciate this, but this is how we work, right? So means that we always accept shruti. Shruti is the main. Then smriti is an application of that, a practical application, right? So that's why it's called tradition, because tradition is how it's applied. So how the great personalities applied it, we follow that. That's tradition. Yes.
And sometimes devotees ask, what's the best shruti for us? Because whatever Srila Prabhupada gave, it's more like smriti.
It's smriti, but it's based on shruti.
Because some say that Sri Upanishad, that's our shruti.
You can say like that, yes.
Yeah,
I mean, that's not a problem to say like that. Mm-hmm. But the point is that it will all be based on that. We may not see how it connects and everything, but you'll see Prabhupada in many times, especially when they're getting to certain technical points, he's always quoting from the Upanishads.
Yes.
You know, the Taittiriya Upanishad and the others, he'll regularly quote them. So he's always taking it back, but you could say as a thing, then yes, Isha Upanishad is our shruti, like that, you know? So.
Shruti is regarding the application, and the application is a wide variety.
Right.
It's a wide range. But in shruti, you know, a specific principle has been mentioned, which is very easy to understand. So is it not that smriti is more confusing and shrutis are easy?
The reason the smritis are there is because the shrutis, because they can accommodate all variety, people have a tendency to not be able to understand them. Because if I say you could do, okay, like this. We're going to explain to you cooking. Okay? So, basically, in the application of heat, then you have a pot. Then you can put some oil in it, or ghee, or whatever it is like that. And in that, then you can put some kind of whole spices. Then after that, then you can put ground wet spices like that, but generally ones that are a little bit more strong, like cumin and dunya, these kind of things like that. Then after that, in the same, in that wet sink, so you can put more subtle spices or other things that will make sauces, like ground up,
tomato puree.
Yeah, you can put tomato there, but like cashew nuts or a koa or different things like that. Then after that, then you would have, then you would put your water, you would be boiling, so at that time, anything you want to put at that time, you know, your salt, your turmeric, other, more of these other powders, but you didn't want them roasted, you wanted them plain. Then you cook that, and then just before at the end, then you put in the things that will give flavor that you want to just be integrated into it, but you don't actually want them cooked, or they will inhibit the cooking, like sugar, or garam masalas or different things at the end. And then once you finish cooking and it's awful, then you can garnish it with different things. Right? Does that make sense? And in the beginning, you could use just any one of those three. You know, or you could use that middle one. So in other words, out of these six places, you can use all of them together or any one of them as you like. Okay? So now do you know how to cook? You understand what I'm saying? That, if you are a cook, that's it. There isn't anything more than that.
There's a variety involved in that.
Yes, so that's the smriti.
Okay,
gotcha. So in other words, that was the shruti, and all the recipes you can do from it, that's smriti. Gotcha. So you have Bengali smriti, Gujarati smriti, South Indian smriti. You understand?
I got it.
Yes, that's the whole point. Mm-hmm. So, yes, in one sense you can say the shruti is easier. But at the same time, because it includes everything, it's not actually easy. Otherwise, we just explain everything, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. And still, it's hard to understand. Because it accommodates everything. So, so that's the whole thing. That or the Chaturvyuha, you know, how they apply there. It accommodates everything. And so it has seemingly contradictory things. So one will be basing off one thing, one will be basing off another, just like what's in the Chaturvyuha. So now if we're taking it that you have Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana as the conceptual or understanding of it, then Sankarshan is Sambandha, Prajumna is Abhideya, and Aniruddha is Prayojana. Then, because Vasudeva includes all of them when you apply it, otherwise how do you get the result, and you can only get a result or work, things only work because of knowledge, you have to have all three. So then Vasudeva has all three. Right? So then that works nicely like that. Another way you do it is Vasudeva is Abhideya, and then Sankarshana and Prajumna are different aspects of Sambandha.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You understand? Yes. So then you say, oh, this is contradictory. So that's the whole point, because it goes back to Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana.
Yes.
So that's the whole thing, is that the simple is actually easier in one sense, but because it accommodates everything, it's harder. So that's why we present and always deal with what's the central core element. And then that's always what everything in the study is compared to. That's what's lacking in the modern, because that core thing, that's Siddhanta. So the modern academia or non-Vedic academia, or even when you're talking about even Vedic, because they're not Vaishnava, they won't actually get these things properly correct. Up to some, whatever degree they are, it's useful. But beyond that, it's not. Right? And so then as you progress in the study, it's always on that same framework. So you can you're just expanding your understanding of the framework rather than, but otherwise, normally people will go like from one shruti to another shruti. So this shruti says this, and that one says that, and this one's like this, and that one's like that. Isn't that interesting? And will they use it? Can they apply it? No, because they don't know Shruti. So, that's right.
So whenever Shrutis discuss some particular point, they must definitely go back to the Shrutis.
They're all based on the Shrutis. Point is that these are great personalities, like Narad Muni, Lord Shiva, and other such persons, who they understand the Shruti, and they're applying it. Then, in a discussion, they explain to someone else how that's applied. And so then you get that specific scripture that's called Smriti. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. The Veda describes everything, all knowledge.
So Maharaj, when these people, they write their own Smritis, Kapila and others, then even their smritis contain the application part.
Yes, but they're basing on the Veda, but because they're understanding the Veda is not complete, therefore their shruti may not be complete. So in sense they will, they're pious and they're following the Vedic culture, they will base it on the shruti, but the problem is they'll only base it on that much of shruti that supports what they're saying. So that's the point they were saying here, is that here the smriti is contradicting the shruti, and they'll say it's no, but because Kapila wrote it, it's more important. The acharya is more important.
Mm-hmm.
But the understanding the shruti, the acharya is important, but it's not that the acharya can contradict the shruti.
Yes.
So there's sometimes devotees will say, well, Prabhupada didn't follow the rules, he changed things and that. He absolutely didn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's just they don't understand what the rules are. And what are the primary rules in which Prabhupada applied it? Like he'll say, oh, but you know, before, you know, grihasthas didn't live in temples, women didn't live in temples. Of course they did. That's why it's called a temple. If you have a mutt, there's no women. If you have a monastery, there's no women. So Gaudiya mutt, there are mutts. So the mudras have mutts, the Gaudiya, you know, Gaudiya mutt is mutts. So those, there are no women, no grihasthas. But that's one system. The other system is temple. All that is grihasthas. You go to Tirupati temple, it's just grihasthas. Right? So like that. So people will say, without a proper understanding, oh, Prabhupada's changed. Why? Because they want to change. And so they'll use something that they think Prabhupada did to support what they're doing. This is what it's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So when people's application doesn't match the authority, it can't be accepted. So it's a very relevant point. So, there's Shruti, that's the Veda, everything's based on, then the Smriti, all the scriptures that are there, then we have the comments of the Acharyas. That's how we're going to understand, right? And then other devotees are there, they help us understand, but that line has to be there. What we're hearing from devotees must be in line with what Prabhupada says. Prabhupada, what he says, is in line with the Acharyas before him, headed by Rupa Goswami, and then what they're speaking on is on the Smriti and the Shruti. So it all has that perfect line. That's the parampara. But when we don't accept something before and make up our own, and think, oh, this is more practical. Yeah, that's how it was. That's okay. But this is more practical. It's cut off. It becomes what probably the term called in Bengali, asar, useless. Because it's cut off. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what happens. So that then when people take parts that they like and make up their own thing, then, yeah, so just like spontaneous devotional service is one of our core fundamental practices. But if we just take that at the expense of following Shastra and authority and sadhana, then that group, even though it's based on the principle, they're sahajas. Because they don't actually accept that you're supposed to know knowledge. Because we see is that Chaitanya Shikshamrita. Now, is that not technical knowledge or not?
Yes.
Right? But whose siksha is it? Lord Chaitanya's.
Yes.
So this is what Lord Chaitanya taught. And the fun part is, we get into all these nice things, and then you have, what is it? Brahmar Gita, right? You know, that. What's Krishna's message? You can't be separated from me because I'm all pervading. Right? And then we're going to, you know, say, oh, you know, because normally we would say, oh, this is not Rasik. This is not, you know, 10th canto of Raja Bhav or Gopi Bhav. So we're not getting, the point is they know he's everything and they can see him in everything. They have the highest realization of Krishna that there is to have. But it doesn't in any, all it does is increase their attraction to the original form of Krishna. Because he has these other forms of Paramatma and Brahman, and they accept that. But the point is it just reminds them of Bhagavan and that of his original form in Braj. So it in no way does. So in this way, then they can feel, yes, I'm always with Krishna, but there'll still be that flavor of separation because you're not with the original form. You see the niceness of the forest, so therefore that's the beauty of the forest, and he's the most beautiful. So you always go back to the original form. You know, an interaction with him in his original form. But so you can see him in everything, but because you're not with the original form, that's called vipaloma. But you're technically not separate from Krishna. You can't be separate from Krishna. Krishna is everything, and we're part of that. So how can we be separate? That's like saying the wheel cap, you know, is, you know, is separate from the car or something. Mm-hmm. It can't be.
Yeah. It mentions that whenever there is a contradiction between the Srutis, then one should refer back to the Srutis.
Yes.
But if people are not intelligent enough to understand the Srutis themselves, then what will they understand the Srutis? And what are they going to refer and infer from that?
But that's their problem. Our problem, we don't have that problem. We always refer back to authority.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like that. But otherwise, if you can quote some Shruti, then it might help. They might listen. Yeah, they'll be impressed. Oh, okay, maybe we should listen to this.
Can we say that technically the commentaries of our acharyas should be regarded as Smriti?
Yes, it's Smriti. But it will be specifically how we'll apply it. Because you can take the same thing and you get different. Like, let's say you have the Vedanta Sutra. Now, all the acharyas give a different commentary because they're bringing out different aspects. So but all of them are correct, you know, except Shankara. But they're all correct, but they're bringing out different flavors. So when you're emphasizing, it means when the focus is just on the Icha Shakti with the Jnana and Kriya supporting that, right? And it's the flavor of that, then that Braj flavor, that will be our commentary. When you're taking it that you have that with the Jnana and Kriya, they both have basically like an equal footing. It can be this or that. Then you'll have, you know, the other sampradayas that deal with Goloka. Then when you have the Vaikuntha ones, they're basically dealing with Jnana and Kriya, but you're fulfilling Krishna's desire within that. Does that make sense? Like Balaram, he's the lord of the Kriya. So he sees himself as the personality of servant or Godhead. Right? And technically, he's the supreme personality of servant Godhead, because all other servant or Godheads are expanded from him. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah, and then he expands as Jnana, as Vasudeva, and then from there you get the Chaturvyuha and all the Vaikunthas. So you can see as within that, basically, they're working within the realm of the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis. But they're worshipping the Lord, because he is Vishnu Tattva, and they're fulfilling his desire. So they're dealing with Icha, but Icha within Jnana and Kriya. You know, or technically it's within Jnana, and Icha and Kriya are functioning there. So you have the ultimate thing, you're fulfilling the Lord's desire, but it's within that flavor. You understand? So it has a different flavor. So that will be the difference in the commentaries, is where the flavor is. Mm-hmm. But as far as facts and everything, there won't be any difference. Because there's only one absolute truth, that's the Lord. But it's just which aspect they're bringing out, which flavor, which approach, like this. Does that make sense?
Can we, like, when you say about the different sampradayas writing different commentaries, let's say, for example, Vedanta Sutra, for some difficulties which I couldn't find in our commentaries, I referred to Sri Bhashya on the point of creation, and I got some really nice information from there, like, which I was able to understand. So can you say then that the Sambandha knowledge, you know, of all the sampradayas, they are common? I mean, there shouldn't be any change, there shouldn't be any differences as such.
There'll be difference in the flavor of more towards sweetness or more towards Aishwarya. That will be the difference. Like, but we're talking about the
Sambandha will be there, even the creation part, like the core creation.
It's just a matter of where they emphasize. The point is the facts will be the same, but how you understand the facts.
Because I was thinking in terms of prayojana.
It's just like this. Is that a recording machine?
Mm.
Is that a recording machine?
Yeah.
So as facts go, they're recording machines. But now when you look at that, do you prefer this one or you prefer that one? Yes, because this one has the double thing, you don't get the questions and all this and that. But at the same time, as try putting that in your pocket. That one you can. So depending upon what you want that ease and that, and you just push the button and it works like that. And that, then this one is the one. If you want, you know, a more higher quality, you're talking about the recording and all those kind of things, technical, then this is the one you want. So it's just a matter of which one you want. You know, is it the, how you say, sweetness or Aishwarya?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So that's what you're dealing with. But the point is if Ramanujacharya has already made that point, why do we need to make the same point? that make sense? You don't have to reiterate a point that someone else has already done. Like, Sridhar Swami has already made the point. We don't need to make the point. We just quote him. Now, if within that he's given a broader point that needs some explanation, then based on that point, we'll give a further explanation. And in giving that explanation, let's say there's so many angles you could take. Let's say there's three main kind of perspectives you could use. And so then, depending upon the situation, one acharya uses one. Then the other acharyas will explain the other ones because they haven't been explained. But once it's explained, there's no need to explain it again. So that's why you'll see is that when it comes to much of the time technical things like that, creation or other things, then because it's already been explained by Madhura or Ramanuja or somebody, we don't need to explain it.
Okay.
We're explaining the farther points that bring out from the Chintaveda Veda Tattva.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that'll be how they'll deal in the commentaries on Gita and Bhagavatam. So sometimes devotees will say, oh, there's a contradiction or between what Vishwanath says and what Baladev says and how we resolve this, and you know, with so much discussion has to be there, and you know, stuff like that. But no, they're just bringing out two different points of the same thing that work, and so that's there. And if you check Prabhupada's purport, he has both of them in it. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing, is that there is no contradiction. Right? Means that it's apparent contradiction, so we can call it contradiction. But technically there's not, because it's just different points of the same thing. Right? Does that make sense?
Maharaj, I just don't clear idea what actually makes Shruti a Shruti and Smriti. I have some doubts there. So.
Shruti means the four Vedas. And Smriti means everything else after that.
So it's like set up, okay, this is Shruti and everything else.
Means Shruti is the four Vedas.
Yeah.
The four Vedas and the four parts.
Okay.
That's Shruti. Everything else then is Smriti.
Because let's say Lord Chaitanya's instruction is direct instruction. You cannot take it as Shruti?
If you want to do that, you can. But that is because for us that will be prominent, but you can't say that, well, that is, the others aren't, we don't take it that far. Shruti, Shruti, that's what it is. And so this will be done as Smriti. So Bhagavad Gita is Smriti. So it's directly spoken by the Lord. You know, so we're comfortable, you know, therefore we're taking that. But we don't have to artificially try to put these other things in. Yes, for us, this is more, and yes, this is good. It is Shruti in that way. But the same time as far as the tradition goes, it's Smriti.
So I'm thinking in this context that when there is a contradiction between Smriti, then we have to take up the Shruti. But in our case, it's like difficult. So therefore,
it's not difficult because the Acharyas have already done that for us.
Okay, just take that what they.
Yes, in other words, how they approach, how they do. That's what we're trying to do in these studies of these courses.
Okay.
Is show how it is that the acharyas are approaching. Mm-hmm. So it's not speculative. It has one consistent system for the whole thing.
Yeah. Okay.
Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Are they all sampradayas except Prasthana tribe?
Within the Vaishnavas, yes. There are some smartas that will only accept Shruti. They won't accept Smriti.
And will they accept Vedanta Sutra as well?
Not necessarily. No. They'll work on Upanishads. That. So you have those who do that. So when they do, then they put everything based around there. So then like you've heard of, you have the Upavedas, like that. So it has that name because you can connect them to each Veda. And so then, in that way, then they put it together. Because we generally would call it Upapurana. Because it's a part of the Puranic literature. Because when you're accepting Shruti and Smriti, when you're accepting all 14 books, then they become part of Purana. Or you can even have them on their own, like Madhvacharya, then he counts it as 18 books. And so the four Upapuranas are their own book. But otherwise, for those who follow the just the Veda, then they'll include that within the Veda itself. So Dharma, you have the Dharma Sutras, the Kriya Sutras. They won't have the Dharma Shastras or like this. So they'll have everything connected back there. So they'll have some core elements that are there. But the detail of that and the expansion of that that you get in the Smriti, then they'll miss out on that. You know, but you have that, and so it works for them.
And what do we call Vedangas?
No, Vedangas are those things by which you can, basically approach the Vedas. So that means the four aspects of language, and then, ritual, and then the proper timings for the rituals. So those are the six. So that's Vedanga. Like that. And then Upanga, that will be then your understanding of it. Right? So then that will be your Mimamsa, it'll be the histories, it'll be the Dharma Shastra and the Gata. So you have the mechanics of dealing with the Veda and then the understanding. Because without language, how do you understand what's there?
Mike?
Yes.
In the Sikh school, they accept the Shruti, they accept Vedanta Sutra.
That, whether they do or not, I don't think it's important for them. Because they have the Shruti, and then whatever Smritis are important for them. And they're just like for us, Bhagavatam's prominent, not like any of the other. But like for the Shris, then Vishnu Purana is their main work. So depending upon the line, different Smritis will be more prominent. So that's why then you follow the Acharyas. Because then they give, there's a particular result you want, so they give which way to approach. So that's why then having the founder Acharya is extremely important, because they bring it down much more detailed to the situation that's there, so that it's kind of like, you know, how you say, Vedic understanding for dummies, you know, like that. So they bring it down to that's where we can use it. So they give much more detail than necessarily would be given by others. Like that. Because you see is that, we'll say, is no, but Prabhupada is so simple, but he brings it down to a more technical application than necessarily others are bringing. You know, or he's choosing out of all these that are explained which ones we should follow. So it makes it that the founder Acharya always establishes a complete lifestyle and application. So the whole system is very approachable for anyone. Anyone can use it, whether they understand it or not, it'll work. Right? Well, the Acharyas, then they'll bring out some aspect that's, you know, and delineate that very nicely so that one has more of an understanding, but then you still have to be able to apply that into the situation we're in. So that's what the founder does. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And which scripture use Madhavacharya?
That I'm not sure. I think Bhagavatam is very prominent for them, except for the Brahma Vimohan Lila. That one they just don't. They don't. It's not in their book. Just missing. Yes.
Brahma Samhita is part of the Veda?
That'll be Smriti.
That's Smriti.
Because Brahma, Lord Brahma spoke that.
When it's Samhita, it's not part of the Veda.
No. Means, as we said, Shruti means you have the four Vedas themselves, the Samhita of the Vedas. That means all the verses of the Vedas. Then you have all the different Brahmanas that are connected with that Veda. That then explain how to use the Veda in various rituals. Right, depending on what you want. So some will emphasize one or the other. So between all of them, all of the ritual ways of application are there. The Aranyakas then explain all the metaphysical explanations behind all those verses and all those rituals. Mm-hmm. And the Upanishads explain the philosophical understanding of all the verses. So in other words, you have the verses of the Samhita. That's the Veda. Then you have three different approaches to that: ritualistic, metaphysical, and spiritual. Right? That's the Veda. Right? So any of those in those subsections that are explaining that, then that's all considered part of the Veda. Okay. So we deal predominantly with Smriti. Like that. But everything we see is the Acharyas take it back, because they're constantly going back in their comments to original verses. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. Because that original verse, because it has that, it has a primary aspect, therefore the same verse can explain so many things. Does that make sense? Yeah?
Okay. The mind has different setups.
Find where it goes. Yeah, you have to categorize. That's the whole point of simplifying it down to the categories where it fits. Then that already makes it easier for the mind, because that's the first thing that the mind will do, is reduction. You get so much information, it has to reduce it down to something that how you can categorize it.
Yeah.
So that's why we always categorize it.
Yeah.
You know? And then from there, then you expand. But you're expanding based on Siddhanta. But for those who are into mental speculation, as soon as you come to conclusion, then you can't speculate, because their speculation is based on whatever they feel like thinking about it, not that. So that's the difference, is that we can use this process of analyzation, but it's not speculation, because it's based on Siddhanta. While what we call mental speculation is the same process, and it will use, you know, the authority to just in as much as it gives rise to the ability to come up with varieties of analyzation, so that we can just have fun analyzing. You understand? So that's the thing, is that it's thought, oh, if you have conclusion, you can't analyze. No, it's when you have conclusion, that's where real analyzation takes place. So therefore, we'll call it contemplation, but for these others, it's speculation. But the mechanics are the same. You know, it's just like cooking for Krishna and the Karmi cooking the same preparation. The mechanics are the same. Is that something?
Copyright belongs to somebody else, not to us. That's the difference. Descending and ascending process.
Yes. Because they want to have the authority. It's named after them.
Yeah.
You know, like Cleopatra had cats, right? You know, but, you know, somehow or another, but we don't think about all that. But it's Schrodinger, his cat. Now, that's important. You know. So that's the difficulty, is that, you know, somebody figures it out, and then now it's theirs. You know, that island's been there forever, but now it's, you know, whatever it is, some guy's island now. You know, natives have been living there for, you know, thousands of years, but now somehow or another, it's his island. Just because he saw it, you know, that's it. Yeah. Like that. Yeah. So, to get rid of that, then we have to see it has to go back to authority. And so that's how we function. So there's plenty of intellectual capabilities to apply. Like you see here is that we're going into, you know, technically into these kind of points. So they're quite, you could say, academic. But the difficulty is this will always bring it back to the same point, so you can't take it off. Oh, so then, no, here. Oh, so, no, like that. Oh, you don't allow us to think. No, we don't allow you to speculate. We want you to think, but we're waiting for you to start thinking instead of speculating. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the point. So this kind of approach will not be attractive to scholars. Because what's attractive to scholars is useless. That's the whole point. So we're not interested in that. And so then doing that to make sure it doesn't have that, to make it approachable, then you see Prabhupada uses very, very just approachable language. And so then it won't be considered, people won't consider it scholarly, though it's way more scholarly than any scholar's scholarship. because they can't catch it, they can't understand it, because we're talking about revealed scripture here. The knowledge is revealed, so unless you're pleasing Krishna, so then when you see it, you see what is going on. Like we see Prabhupada's constantly, as we go in 9th canto, 10th canto, bringing out the sarvam kalvidam brahma, everything's Brahman, everything's Krishna. Like that. And we're thinking, why is he emphasizing? This is the basic point. Yeah, yeah, but we've moved on to higher points. But then what's the point that Krishna tells the gopis? I am everything. Right? So therefore, this is Krishna's instruction of the gopis. Right? You know, so that's the whole thing. And from that, then you understand the higher point. So it's not, the point itself is the knowledge is the medium to understand. So it's when Krishna reveals. Otherwise, you just say, oh, that's Maya body. Well, that's impersonal. The point is if you leave it that, then it's impersonal. But if you take it back to, well, where does this, everything's coming from Krishna, so therefore, how is that impersonal? If we say there is everything, there's Brahman, that's impersonal. But Brahman is situated on Krishna. Does that make sense? So it's stepping stone. They all remind you of. Just like when you come into the temple, even you haven't seen the deity, it reminds you of the deity. So therefore you come in, you bow down, you know, don't yell and scream, run around, you know, have a picnic, you know, all these kind of things. You know, you because it reminds you of the deity. So therefore that's the whole point. The temple reminds you of the deity worship. You know, which reminds you of the deity. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the situation, the temple, that's Brahman. Right? The rituals and that of the deity worship, that's Paramatma. But who are you worshiping? Krishna, who's Bhagavan. So it all matches together. It all fits very nicely. So when that's seen, then everything reminds you of Krishna. So that's the difference. Gopis come into the temple, they're fully absorbed in Krishna and his pastimes. We come into the temple and we're sitting there and, you know, who's that over there chanting and what's going on here, checking our phone and all that. We're still a little careful, but we're not as careful as, because it fully reminds us of Krishna, it's his place. You know what I'm saying? So the more you advance, the more anything reminds you of Krishna. So that's why the gopis are considered the topmost of that realization. So there's no time when they're separated, but it doesn't mean they don't feel separation. Is that so? Yeah, so that's the fun that we're talking about.
So the speculative knowledge is actually directly opposing devotional service.
It's directly opposing. Just like fruit of action is directly opposing. Because I'm doing the mechanics of devotion, but for myself. Or I'm doing the mechanics of using my intelligence, but for myself. So they're directly opposed. But karma yoga and jnana yoga means you're taking the mechanical part that you know of from karma and jnana, that connecting it to Krishna. So for me is I do fruit of work, and here is ritualistic activities to perform. I can relate to that, but now the ultimate result is for Krishna. But I'm comfortable in this field of karma, you know, karma yoga, because it's like the karma that I was doing before. But as you go, because it is connected to Krishna, you become purified. So therefore, karma yoga and karma are totally opposed to each other. Though, externally, they're exactly the same. So that's the whole point. Krishna consciousness is a change in the consciousness, not in the activity. It becomes much more of a change in activity for us, because the activities we were doing before aren't worth doing. So you have to switch to something that's, you know, useful. So that's why it appears it's such a change. But technically, for human life, there's no change. Human life means you're following the Veda. So therefore, there's no change. You know what I'm saying? You might drop the kamyaka aspect like that, but you're following all your duties, doing all the varnashram, doing all these different things, but you're doing that in connection to Krishna. So that's karma yoga. You study the scriptures like we're studying this jnana yoga. Right? You know, so like the scholar, he likes to study, so now he's studying Prabhupada's books. So So that's Jnana Yoga. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. It's just that difference on, is the primary involved or not? Because everything being Krishna, you're only dealing with Krishna. There's no question that a living entity can be separated from Krishna and not in contact with Krishna. Because everything's Krishna. The living entity is part and parcel of Krishna. But because they think they are separate, and there is separate situations, knowledge, endeavors, results, enjoyments that are all separate from Krishna, that's illusion, because it's not. So as soon as we know it's Krishna, we behave differently. You know, just let's say, for example, we're in a rich man's house, and, you know, as far as we know, he's away on the weekend, you know, for vacation. So how we may deal in the house may be quite different than if we thought he was in the house. You know, we might not sit back on the couch, put our feet up on the, you know, the divan and all these different kinds of things. You know, go and check out things, poke and touch different things. You know, well, if we knew that they were there, we wouldn't do any of that. So that's the difference. That's what we mean. You change the consciousness, it automatically changes what you do. Right? So therefore, if I think Krishna is present in everything and it's all about Krishna, I will deal with everything differently because of that. So I won't think of the sense gratification and all those things. So I will deal differently. I don't have to change how I deal with it. I have to change the mentality. Right? Now, there are certain changes of mental of what you're doing that will help you change the mentality. So that's what's recommended. Does that make sense? But it's not about those rituals, it's about changing the mentality. So when you change the mentality, you'll automatically adjust everything. So that's why the emphasis is on that, but the recommendation is these things are adjusted. So when we think, oh, it's not about the ritual or the secondary, so then we think we don't have to adjust any of these things. But the point is, if you don't adjust, will you be adjusting your... You say, it's all about consciousness, but what are you doing to see that the consciousness is there? Because since those support the consciousness, why wouldn't you be comfortable doing them? You know, just like, okay, let us say we have the rule, sit down to eat, right? Don't walk around and eat, right? Cows walk around and eat. Take a bite, walk around, chew, like that. You understand? So we may say, oh, this is so restricting and this and that, but if the principle is to appreciate the prasad, this is Krishna, how can you do that when you're walking around doing other things? You understand? So therefore, by sitting down, you'll be able to appreciate more. Not that the Uttamadhikari couldn't appreciate Krishna while they're walking around and eating, but since it's about appreciating Krishna, why would they want to walk around? They would rather sit. So that's the thing, is you have these, you're trying to bring it to the primary, but since the primary is expressed through the secondary, you have to follow the secondary. But the secondary is useless without the primary. So that's the whole thing, is that either one you explain, there's always a doubt or misgiving about the other one. And so depending on what it is, then you will be encouraging or discouraging. You know, so if we say, yes, it's just about Krishna, it's not about the ritual, so then that's enough. For someone who follows ritual and is situated in ritual, then it's not about the ritual, it's about Krishna. They'll follow the ritual and adjust their consciousness. But for someone who's attached to akarma or vikarma, then you say it's not about the ritual, they'll just immediately throw out the ritual. And they say, no, these are important. Human life begins when you start doing these things. You know, without regulation, you can't elevate yourself. We'll have all those things. But now if someone goes, oh, it's all about the regulation, so I'm regulated, I follow all the rules, therefore I'm a good devotee, and all these others who aren't so strong in that, they're not good devotees. I'm the only real devotee. Then you bring out the opposite of that. No, it's about the primary. You understand? So the point is that each one is important. They're both important, but we have to understand primary is more important than secondary. But you won't know primary without secondary. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing. But it's in support of. So that's why Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Balaram is the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. Because Servitor Godhead is subordinate to Original Godhead. Does that make sense? The position of both of them is special. So that's the whole thing, is that one has to be able to accommodate both are required. So Krishna and his energy. Because otherwise it's, oh, well, the energies are great. We'll walk on, like Ravana. He just needed the energy. He didn't need Ram. Sita's enough. He's satisfied, right? That's not going to work. Or others, then it's just about the Lord and nobody else. So they don't care for the Vaishnavas or anything. It's just about like that. So both are wrong. You have to have them both together. You know, because Krishna performs his pastimes with the devotees, with his energies. So that's the thing. He has unlimited energies. So that's why you understand if he is everything, then that means he has an aspect to interact with every aspect of energy. So that's very personal. So without understanding this aspect, seemingly impersonal, you don't fully understand the personal. But without understanding the personal, this impersonal aspect doesn't have any value. Does that make sense? So you appreciate the person more because of all these aspects. So you could say, that's opulence. No, it's personal because we are one of those energies. An expansion and expansion and expansion, like that, go on for a long time. You know, come back after 3 days. Expansion and expansion and expansion. You know, come back after 3 weeks. And expansion and expansion, like that. You know, we're somewhere in there. And so, therefore, we have the person that's part of. And so that all then goes together. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like you can say, okay, the sitar has the main strings. Why do we need all those funny little strings underneath? Just, you know, it's more work, it's more like that. Because they're the same note as those main strings. It's not that they're adding new notes. They're exactly the same notes. But what happens is when you play the main note, then those notes resonate. And it adds to the sound, because it's like when you have that little bit of a reverb or a little echo. You know, it adds something, because if it's clean with nothing, it's very sterile, so you add in just a touch. You don't want too much. You know, so that's what they do, is that the main one plays and then that echoes. So that's what all the different living entities are do. So therefore it's Krishna and Radharani, and everybody else is just echoing.
Nice example.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's then where it comes. So therefore every living entity has their place in that echo. So that's why if he's not everything, how are we part of it? How can we interact and relate with it? So it's very personal. That's the problem, is the Mayavadis and the impersonalists have taken this very wonderful part of the understanding of rasa and removed rasa from it. You know, that's why the Mayavadis are the worst. Because there's no form, there's no interaction, there's no taste, there's no nothing. You know? Does that make sense? So that's the problem. They're the worst because they take totally the personal out of it. Akarmi's better in one sense.
Yeah.
Because they accept the personal, though they don't know spiritual personal, they only know material personal. But because to deal properly with persons, you have to be renounced. Right? The more you renounce, the better you can deal with people. Right? Because then it will be about them. As long as you're attached, it'll be about yourself. So therefore, then that renunciation aspect is more difficult, takes more training and all that. That's why the impersonalists will be respected socially over the karmis. But as far as the situation of consciousness, and that even though it's in one sense a higher consciousness, there's more to get in the way. If you can get over it, of course they're very advanced, just like you saw what was with Vaishnav Das. Right? So he's a Mayavadi, he's well situated in that, he knows logic, he knows Kavya, he knows it coming out of his ears. So you know if you wanna, you know, scholars beware. You know? This guy is formidable. So And he is as dry as a bone as they get. And then one day, somehow or another, he gets the mercy of the Lord. He comes in contact with a Vaishnava, and he's impressed. And so then wanting to take that up, then he comes to Navadvipa. And then when he hears the philosophy and applies all his knowledge and logic and everything in the appropriate way, then you see very quickly he's very advanced. So now when it comes to, somebody comes to argue with the devotees in Navadvipa, then they ask, you know, if they're more scholarly, they ask him to take care of it. Not that they couldn't take care of it, but since they're not into arguing, and he knows the science of it, so let him do it. Right? And he's happy as a service to be able to serve the Vaishnavas in that way, but he's very advanced that way. Yes.
Can you say that because Vaishnavas Babaji was already a sannyasi, he was advanced?
He was advanced in Gyan.
Yes, advanced in Gyan. But just because of the touch of bhakti, he quickly rapid progress in it.
Yes, but it's not just the touch of bhakti, it's that he took it up. But, you know, the touch will always make it perfect, but what we're meaning is he didn't maintain his attachment to that scholarship. Mm-hmm. If he maintains his attachment, you'll see they have great problems. Mm-hmm. Because they're attached to it, and so you're bringing up something, and they're so smart, and they'll start putting it together, and they'll come up with all these amazing, things you can do. But much of the time, they're not devotional, even though they're devotees, because they don't know. It's because they're intellectual; they're used to working in that field. So all they do is just connecting it, but they don't know the field that they're working with is non-devotional. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So you have to be able to know what you keep, what you don't. Like in cooking, you know, you have to drop all the onion and garlic. Like that. Of course, then South Indians wouldn't be able to cook, but hey, you know, so you drop that, everything else you leave, and then, you know, it's useful. But if you maintain that, it's always a problem. It always has a smell. Does that make sense? Yeah, so seeing that's the core thing. Now the French, now everything's about butter, that one can remain. You know, someone said that there's three main ingredients in French cooking that have to be there. There's butter, butter, and butter. Then, so that can remain. Does that make sense? So you have to be able to tell what is useful and what's not. So if you maintain attachment, then I'm a scholar, there'll always be a problem. If I'm just a devotee and I'm able to use scholarship in Krishna service, then there'll be so much wonderful understanding. Does that make sense? Yeah, like that. Or someone thinks I'm a big manager and that. They'll always have problem. Always. Like that. So that's the way it goes, is that if you identify with it and you're attached to the mundane identity, there'll be a problem. So we'll think by the impersonal concept that it's either karma or jnana, right? So if I'm not attached to it, then I don't do it. That's how impersonalism works, right? Jnana works. Karma works, I'm attached to it, I do it. Jnana is, I'm not attached to it, I don't do it. So then automatically is, oh, so if it's not about the karma, so I don't do it at all. So that's it's due to our attachments that you get this. So that's Niyamagraha. We're not quite catching the thing. Is that?
Yeah. Maharaj, again, continuing with the point that so the speculative karma and jnana, there's a group, they are like directly atheists. They oppose devotional service, they hold on to this speculative knowledge.
Yes, yes.
But there is another category which are like part of devotees group, but still they hold on.
Yes, they hold on to it. And when they give that up, then they'll find their devotional service goes very nicely. But as long as they're not offending devotees and things like that, they're being careful in the practice of their devotional service, then by doing devotional service, this will get purified until they come to that point. Just like someone attached to karma, by connecting with Krishna, they'll get purified until it comes to the point of pure devotional service. So in either way, whether it's karma, jnana, or yoga, it has to come to the point of pure devotional service. So as long as you identify there and are attached there, it will always create a bit of a problem. Does that make sense?
And how can
So just like devotees who come, generally you think of most devotees coming with an attachment to karma. Mm. But there's those who come with attachment to jnana, because Krishna consciousness has everything. So you're going to get both. So it's the same thing. They just connect that to Krishna. They like study Prabhupada's books. You know, give class, preach. Try, then all these things. Then they'll get purified. But if they maintain that identity that they maintain, that will always give them a problem.
And worse for them who promote it, no?
Yes, and then it gets worse because then it starts to get rooted and they start to create the desire in someone else.
And that's actually offensive, is it, as you mentioned?
Yeah, it means it's very detrimental. Yeah. Right, because they're now preaching a philosophy, I suppose. They may have it just because they're not catching it that they're attached. So they don't see. That's why the association of devotees, then you can see what you're attached to. They point it out. Because on our own, then we're going to think, especially those who come more from the Gyan side, they'll consider themselves more intelligent, because material they may be. But that doesn't mean that they understand Krishna consciousness any more, or are more nicely situated. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
so that's the point. Karma and Gyan are both overrated. And neither of them have any... it's not that they themselves produce bhakti. Because I'm so intelligent, therefore I must be both. Because I'm so good at, you know, manipulating material energy and getting results, that makes me a greater devotee. Right?
Yeah.
So the person who studies, then he gives the class. But it doesn't necessarily mean that his class is better than anyone else's. Does that make sense? It's who's more advanced, that's a better class. That makes sense. But they do the service of, they can study, they can do these things. So they'll bring out very nice points, and as far as their realization goes, then that's great. So as long as that sincerity is there, then it's a wonderful class. But as soon as they think that because of my scholarship, this will be a fabulous class, then you'll always find it falls flat. When you go into the class thinking, wow, the devotees are going to be impressed today, that day they're totally unimpressed. So that's the way it goes. Whenever there's pride, things don't work. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes?
Right. In terms of association, we know that people with the same inclinations, either karma or jnana, you know, they gather together.
Right.
And then they hear, you know, the same... you know, mood in the same mood,
right,
it becomes Gana. So then within Krishna consciousness, then we have, you know, Ganas, different groups.
Right, right.
And it's actually very difficult to get out of this Sangha because we feel this is Vaishnava Sangha. This is matches our spiritual and material needs.
Right.
So then how can we act? Because other Sangha, it's very difficult to take. It's very bitter.
But the point is you're within the Sangha, you're supposed to associate with those more advanced than you.
Yes.
So therefore you'll progress within your group.
Okay.
You know, so that's why it'll go. And so as you progress, it'll be easier and easier to work with other groups. But it's not that you have to be with them all the time. It's that when you happen to be working, you're comfortable with that. But it's not that you don't prefer your own working in your own, with, you know, those who you relate to. So this idea is that, oh, you can't have friends. This is all impersonal. No, but we should all work together. It's all impersonal. It's a matter of, we should be able to socially work with everybody, but at the same time, it's our preference is those who have a similar nature that we can relate. And because with them, you can discuss things. You know that you can speak and the words you use aren't going to be an issue. But like if you're dealing with a different group, every word you say has the possibility of being the wrong word. So you can't relax. There's nothing you can do. It's like you can't sit down there and ask for more sugar in your drink or put some more salt on whatever you're eating or eat dairy or any of these. Because depending on your wrong group, any one of those is so volatile as people could be standing up yelling and screaming and marching out and all that simply because you put more salt. You know, so it's just you, therefore, that's why you live with those who you have the same nature. You can work with anybody because of Vaishnava etiquette. So if there's a need in the service that comes up, you do that. But other than that, you don't, because otherwise it doesn't work. You know, it's just like I remember once, Polish cooking. You eat the snacks, you know, the pierogies and the gołąbki's and the plotskis and all these kind of things. You eat them all with shmitana, right? And so then I mentioned to this one Polish devotee that all these preparations are just different flavors and excuses to eat shmitana. They didn't really like that. Because it was the prep, and you eat that with this. But, you know, coming from the American background, it's that the thing you're eating is the excuse for what's on top. Like the pizza is what's on top, or the sandwich is what's inside. It's not about the bread or the pasta, or the it's about what you put on top of it. So if I said that to an American, they would have agreed. But I said that to some Polish, and it's, no, the preparation also. You know, it's a balance here. You know, so that's why Ghana. Does that make sense? And then even within that, you know, New York pizza, Chicago pizza. You know. Yes. Okay, we're all good. Pizza tattva here. Okay.
All right. How to differentiate contemplation and speculation?
Contemplation is speculation. Contemplation is based on a particular conclusion of devotional service. Then you're trying to see how it practically applies in your life. What are the options of application? Speculation means is that I have this point of knowledge. What can I do with it?
Okay.
So if it's what I can do with it, then it's intellectually very stimulating the more variety and different ideas you come up with. You know, it's just like, I think I've mentioned before, there's a theory in physics. It's not there, but just someone came up with it, I'm not sure how long ago, that actually it's not that it's a globe, the Earth, and that when you go into space you're going out. It's actually you're inside a sphere. And when you go into seemingly space, you just are going towards the center, and everything as you go gets smaller and smaller and smaller. So that's why it seems like it's going farther, because it's just getting smaller. And physics can't disprove this. You know, so it's just one of those things that you know, just for fun may bring up. You know what I'm saying? So that's like that. It's just, it has no real basis, but it's fun to discuss. That's speculation. Like that. Does that make sense? And then they've made a whole culture out of the speculation that my speculation is right, yours is wrong. Though they're all speculation. You know, therefore, string theory and particle theory, they can't stand each other. Right? Now I heard for an alternative, you can go into dark matter. Yeah.
Sometimes, actually, people take some quote of Prabhupada and same thing can be used, and again, using some.
Yes, but then you have to see, that's why tradition is there. Is that Prabhupada said that how did he apply it? What did he do with it? You know, what did the acharyas do with it? That's then you have to see it in that context. Because otherwise, yes, because words have so many meanings, but the whole point is the abhida meaning, the direct meaning is what we're trying to use in the context that it's there. Because otherwise, like we said, is that one time a devotee went through Prabhupada's books and lifted all the quotes about grihastha life, categorized it, put it together, brought it to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada looked at it and said, useless. Because in that, he only took the secondary aspects. He didn't show the primary of how all that connects to Krishna. So in the purport that's there that Prabhupada's talking about, the primary point they left out, they just took the mechanics. So even though it was Prabhupada's quotes, it's on that, it's Vedic literature, it's Vedic culture, Prabhupada said it's useless because it doesn't include Krishna, which Prabhupada in the original purport had. So not seeing that, because you think, oh, we have to take this whole paragraph when I could just take this sentence. But the whole paragraph is what's required. Does that make sense? So that's what you have to do. You have to just see. Like that. That's the point. It's a fine line. That's why it says razor's edge. So if you stick to what the Prabhupada's given and the mood that's given, you know, under the guidance of senior devotees, then generally we can be confident we'll be on the razor's edge. But if we, you know, I say, launch off on our own, you know, to unknown, how you say, speculating into areas that no one has ever speculated before, then that kind of approach doesn't, you know what I'm saying? If you're a geek, it works good, but if you're not, then...
Because of so many problems in secondary application of secondary...
That's there. So then you just take what you... You can't just pick what you want. You have to take what is actually supposed to be. So that means we have to adjust ourselves to what's there. Does that make sense? Yeah? Good? Okay. Okay. So far we've just discussed two sentences. One may think, I can refute those who argue on the strength of smritis by the strength of the smritis themselves. Footnote 2. Smritis are all inferior in nature to shrutis and thus should not be accepted. Right, so if they're taking our smriti and the other, but what their smriti is in opposition to the shruti, they can't say that I will take my smriti and defeat your smriti. If our smriti is based on shruti. Mm-hmm. Right? And if it's two that aren't based on, then hey, they can go and have fun all they like. You'll still not get anything. But this would lead to the fault of making other smritis useless. Mm-hmm. Right? So they're saying, don't make ours useless, but then by that, problem, they're making others useless. So their one should not be useless, but the many should be. You know, so that's not going to work very good. One may argue that Kapila is a recognized authority because he is mentioned in the Shvetasvatara Upanishad 5.2. Rishim prasutam kapilam yas tam agre gyaner bibharti. He endowed the sage Kapila born before the creation with knowledge. But this refers to another Kapila, and cannot be the founder of Shankya philosophy, since the founder of Shankya spoke against the meaning of the Vedas. So he spoke against it. It can't mean this Kapila. It must mean another Kapila. Right? Because if they're mentioned there, they're not going to be going against. Does that make sense? So all these different personalities, they're all, you know, how you say? They have, yeah.
The founder of
Sankhya
philosophy is the son of
devotee. Yes, so it's not this, the atheistic Kapila.
This is the atheistic.
That's what we're making it clear about. But it's not the atheistic one. However, Manu is said to be authoritative. Whatever Manu has declared is a cure. Taittiriya Brahmana. Right? So then the Upanishad is saying what is there. It is also said that Parasara attained spiritual knowledge worthy of a devata by the mercy of Pulastya and Vashishta. The Kapila who produced the smriti contrary to the Vedas was born in the Agni dynasty and was bewildered by Maya. He was not Vasudeva, the Lord born from the sage Kardama. Right? So therefore he's establishing this, that Kapila, the actual Kapila that we're talking about of the philosophy, that's the son of Devahuti. Right? But this other is, you know, he's born in the Agni dynasty, and he's the one that by being bewildered by Maya, he comes up with his own philosophy. So those who follow him and his smriti, then there's a problem. So we follow Devahuti Putra. Kapila, the expansion of Vasudeva, spoke Shankya philosophy, promoting the meaning of all the Vedas to Brahma, Devatas, Bhrigu, and others, and to Asuri. Another Kapila spoke Shankya, which was contrary to the Vedas, and full of faulty logic, to another person named Asuri. Padma Purana. So they both spoke to Asuri, but they were speaking to different Asuri. So different Kapilas spoke to different Asuri. So somehow or another, they just go together, right? So if someone says, what's your name? You know, Asuri. Oh, do you have a friend named Kapila? No. Well, how did you know? Right? Yeah. So that's. Yeah, Shankya, yes. And what do you two do? Yeah, we like to analyze. Okay. Thus, there is no fault in discarding Shankya Smriti, which was written by a person without authority, since it is contrary to the Vedas. So the Shankya Smriti, then we're no need to follow that, because we already have the Shankya delineated in what Kapila Muni gave. So we don't need this other one. Does that make sense? So, but those things that have some value, like that, of the philosophies, let's say, and Gotama, then the process of logic, that's useful. But then what he does with it for self-realization, that will leave. That we're not, it's not important. Right? Because he's given 10 different aspects that are there of ways to gain knowledge. But we'll categorize those just in 3. Right? Like that. He'll categorize it as 4. But we'll categorize it as 3. So it's just a matter of what works for you. Where you're going to apply the speculative process, and what for what purpose? So in support of the Veda, you only need 3. If you want to be a little bit beyond that, then 4. If you want to really be beyond that, you have 10. It's not that these 10 aren't all there in the 3 or 4. It's just that they're subsections, not their own sections. Right? So you make something prominent if it's very important. Does that make sense? So that's that importance for us is given by the acharyas. So how they categorize is what we prefer to use. Does that make sense? You know, that's why you see, now when Prabhupada talks about nyaya, he uses the categorization that is given by Gotama. Right? Now, we see in Vedanta Sutra that Vyasadeva is using a form of that that's for presenting arguments. So we will see what Vyasadevs give as a derivative of what Kapila Muni's given. We won't see it as 2 different systems. Because if you see it like that, you'll just get confused. So we understand Kapila's is the main system, and how Vyasadeva is presented is specific for this work. And so it has its main, it has its application. But there are subsections of what Gotama's already given. Does this make sense? Yeah. So like that is that, that's how then we do it. It's just like you can categorize in so many ways. So we use Kapila, 24 elements. Some give less, some like Brahma talks about 9, some talk about 16, some talk about 32 or 33 or like this, 36 I think. So there's all these different ones, but we'll categorize according to 24. And the other ones, they're all correct, but we'll see them in relationship to the 24. So if we just want to bring out the prominence of the mind, then that aspect of 16, then we can bring out the mind and then the senses. Right? But if we want to bring out just about the mind controlling everything like that, then we might bring out the mind with the 8 elements. So then you have 9. Does that make sense? Because it already means all the others are already included. Because if you have earth, you already have smell. You already have the nose. Right? Does that make sense? So you don't have to add it. But you're seeing, you categorize according to 24. So like that, all the philosophies, Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana, that's how we categorize. That's what's given by the acharyas. That's the framework we use. And like that, all other categories, we are within that. You know, like you have the 5 levels of consciousness, and Prabhupada's quote from a Taittiriya Upanishad. Then all other things that deal with that 5, we'll see in connection with this. Like the 5 ways of gaining knowledge will be seen in relation to this. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha, and Bhakti will see in relation to this. Does that make sense? So we'll use this as the main and then connect everything up. So that makes the different lines of where, what is their core thing and then how they connect everything else. So for us, it's in Veda Veda Tattva, we can connect everything to what we're doing. Because we can accommodate the oneness and the difference and the simultaneousness of that. Well, some can take the oneness, some can take the difference, some can take oneness or difference, but they can't take oneness and difference simultaneously. So that's why we don't have any problem dealing with anything else. Is that... says, yeah. And only by the grace of Lord Chaitanya then these things can be understood or revealed.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanand.